Softly spoken, words of truth lay foundations for the proof. Yahweh's wisdom is sublime, stands the test of time. Words are spoken from the heart. Let us now be set apart. O ye soldiers of the host, give your all and stand your post. Through the day and through the night, gird your loins and fight the fight. Draw your sword and speak your peace. Obey his laws and never cease.
You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and yes, again, I am your host. Praise and honor and glory be to Yahweh the Most High, the Heavenly Father, because there is none that compares with Him. All glory to Him, all praise goes to Him, because everything that we are and have comes from Him. Our righteousness or any goodness, it comes from the Father. Well, you know, we're going to continue with Isaiah, but I'm not sure if we're going to be doing that this week. There were a few things, that I wanted to share with you. I love Eustace Mullins, and I found some extra works of his that either I forgot existed or never knew existed. And I thought I'd share a couple of them with you. I also had downloaded the book recently again, The Externalization of the Hierarchy by Alice Bailey, from the Lucifer Publishing, Lucius Trust. Yeah. I wanted to read you the great invocation that is written at the beginning of this book. And I think that I've scanned through just a bit of it, and I've read it before, but I don't remember it all. But I think it's important for you to hear what is said here. I want to let you know that there are people like Alice and her husband, Foster Bailey, and Benjamin Krem, and a lot of these Satanists around the world, they're waiting for the return of the Christ. Or they're waiting for the Christ to come, I should say. The Maitreya, not Yeshua. This is the Christ. And so everything is an imitation of what the Father does. And it's, again, a cheap imitation. Why don't we just take a quick look? Oh, they call it the Great Invocations. And this is from 1957 by Lucius Trust. If I remember correctly, the offspring of the two apes on the Planet of the Apes, their son was called Lucius, I'm pretty sure. Okay, it starts out like this. Let the forces of light bring illumination to mankind. Let that ring in your head for a second. Let the forces of light bring illumination to mankind. Geez, can you say Prometheus again? Can you say the woman in, or man, whatever that is, the androgynous being in the harbor of New York with the false liberty and the torch? Then it goes on, let the spirit of peace be spread abroad. And this, you know, Lucius Trust is based in the UN, by the way, in case you know. There's been a lot of peace that has been spread by the UN, hasn't it? Sure. Now listen, the next line, because this should explain everything to you. When I was a child, and I think they still have these stores, they were called Goodwill. And when I read this invocation years ago, or whenever it was, how many years ago, I'm not sure, I realized a few things in this thing that will kind of... Everything's let the forces of light bring illumination to me. Let the spirit of peace. Yeah. May men of goodwill everywhere meet in spirit of cooperation, in a spirit. Meet in a spirit of cooperation. May forgiveness on the part of all men be the keynote at this time. You see all the imitation here? Listen to this one. Let power attend the efforts of the great ones. Now, I'm just going to say anything I'm speaking right now, may the opposite happen to these great ones. Let's just say that. But I'm going to show you where one of the most famous songs that was ever written came from, and I really believe this to be true. Are you ready? The next line says, so let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Speaking whisper words of wisdom, let it be. So it says, so let it be and help us do our part. 1935. I really do believe that that's where the idea of both goodwill and let it be came from. For Mr. McCartney. I'm sure he read the great invocations. Listen to this, if this doesn't tell you something right here. What's happening in the world today? Listen to this. Let the lords of liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. And it says, let the rider from the secret place come forth. And coming save. Come forth, O mighty one. You know who that might be, don't you? It's not Jesus Christ. No, it's not. It's not Yeshua. Yeshua. Let's look up succor. They say, let them bring succor to the sons of men, right? I did prepare this because I didn't know what it exactly meant. Assistance and support in times of hardship and distress. Aid, help, a helping hand, assistance. Remember what I told you when in The Hidden Life in Freemasonry, what they told these people? That when you had a bright spirit attached to you, that It was your brother, a helper, and helper. You see? Somebody that was going to bring assistance to you. This spirit that was bright spirit that was attached to you. They also talked about that bright spirit being attached during the Catholic Mass. Very interesting. Someday I'll read it to you. I believe I already have at one point, but we'll go over it again sometime and you'll be pretty much amazed. It says, give succor as a verb, give assistance or aid to. Prisoners of war were liberated and succored. Okay. So let's continue. And of course, as I'm reading this to you, I'm not advocating this. I'm against this Christ, not Jesus Christ, not Yahweh, not Yeshua, Yahweh in the flesh, Yeshua. Yahweh saves. No, I'm against this. So if I speak any of this, don't let it be. And then it says, let the souls of men awaken to the light, capitalized light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord, capital L, go forth. They're not talking about, you see, this is such a disguise that if Christians read this, they might say, oh, this is wonderful. Yeah, no, it ain't wonderful. And it's the Lord they're talking about is the same one in the Bible, Baal. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O mighty one. They say it again now. The hour of service of the saving force. Oh, he's a savior, this Christ that's coming. But he's not the real Christ. He's the imitation Christ. Just like the world has many imitation Christs. And none of these imitations could even measure up to the real in any form or fashion. Let it be spread abroad. You know, they say the hour of service of the saving force. Now, they're calling him a force. That's what the Satanists have always done. According to Fritz Springmeier, he talks about that as well. He said on the 107th page of this book, they give the name of this Christ. Sanat Kumara. And you know that when I say Sanat, you can figure out something about that, right? It's just the name Satan scrambled. Then it says, let light, capitalized, and love, capitalized, and power, capitalized, and death, fulfill the purpose of the coming one, the one. Told you they call him the one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. See how this is all trickery. Come forth, O mighty one, again, it says, and blend these three. They want to blend the will, the love, and the active aid. The rule of evil must now end, 1940. Okay, so the rule of evil is Yahweh. That rule must end. That's what they're trying to say. The rule of the Heavenly Father is evil and must now end. And this Christ, this light bringer, Sanat Kumara, is going to straighten everything all out and end all this evil. So, you've heard of the 1,000 points of light. I'm not going to confuse you with this stuff. There's more here about this stuff. There's another thing. I'll read a little bit of it, but see, this is like plagiarism in a sense, and they're trying to put it so it's like scripture. Listen to this. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. See, but they're not talking about Yeshua. You understand? And now you know where the name of the song Let It Be came from. Speaking words of wisdom like these invocations, that's what it's trying to say. Very interesting, very sickening, really. I just thought I'd read a little bit of that for you. This book is unbelievable. These people, are so mentally ill, it is hard for me to believe. See, the name, the externalization of the hierarchy, there were three ways, three ways that Alice Bailey said that they were going to reach all the people of the world through the church, through education. I'm trying to think of the third. It just slips me right now. It just slipped my mind, but I remember there's three of them. And yes, the Masons, through Masonry, through the church, and through, I can't remember the exact one. I'll find it for you at some point again. But you can see that the Masons are preaching in the church. It was going to be done through Masonry. And these people like William Schneblin and all the people at the Prophecy Club, it was a type of place that this was to take place in. And then you know that Masons went around speaking in churches. Fritz Springmeier said in the book, as I was reading it yesterday, that the Episcopalian sect, the whole thing is run by Freemasons. But we also know that the Baptists are heavily laden with Freemasonry. They've penetrated the churches, ladies and gentlemen. Be nice if I could find out what the third one was. I know what it is. It's just, I don't know it offhand. Sorry. Okay, so let's move on to a Eustace Mullins. It's a little book, and it's called Phony Wars for Phony Peace and the Ministry of Fear by Eustace Mullins. Phony Wars for Phony Peace. Get it? That's why I like Eustace so much. Okay, here he says, let's go with it now. The Orwellian doctrine, perpetual war for perpetual peace, has not been updated to the more practical version, phony wars for phony peace, quote unquote. The established governments have long since abandoned their exhortations to be patriotic, loyal, and sacrificing for the higher good. It has been proven impossible to maintain their former shibboleths as an excuse for the human sacrifice. Let's just check that little word. Could be something like sayings. Let's just look it up real quick. It's, of course, a Yiddish term. Shibboleth, a custom principle of believing, distinguishing a particular class or group of people, especially a long-standing one regarded as outmoded or no longer important. The party began to break with the shibboleths of the left. Funny, it doesn't say that it's Yiddish, but it sure looks like it to me. Yes. A shibboleth is any custom or tradition, hello, of course it's you, usually a choice of phrasing or even a single word that distinguishes one group of people from another. Shibboleths. Leave it to Eustace. There were no flies on him. So it has been proven impossible to maintain their former shibboleths as an excuse for human sacrifice. Indeed, sacrifice has reverted to its original mode, that of religious ritual. The previous rituals, which conditioned the brainwashed victims to lay down their lives to propitiate the gods, have been replaced by more psychological, correct, quote-unquote, methods of persuasion, in which victims nudge each forward in their anxiety to take their places. They nudge each other forward in their anxiety to take their places. laying themselves down on the stone altars and baring their breasts to sacrificial knives, which slash open their bodies to remove the still beating hearts. In 60 years of studying the cause of wars and the mechanisms by which they have been achieved, I have employed one of the principal methods of great cooking, that of reduction. As the chef continues to mix and manipulate the ingredients, they are distilled into a more concentrated form, usually by heat, until the flavors marry, quote-unquote. This is also a recipe for great painting. A certain period is required for the various colors painted onto the canvas to marry, to reconcile with one another. In 60 years of studying, okay, so he's talking about, you know, when you are cooking, let me comment on that. When you're making a sauce, you reduce the sauce, and when you do, it intensifies the flavors. And that's what he's talking about here. The flavors marry, they come together, they just embellish and help enhance one another, is how I should like to say it. My goodness, we've got all kinds of things going on here. Ding, ding, ding. So, eventually these reconcile with one another, subsiding into a beautiful jewel-like overall tone, which we call great art. These are the works of the old masters who used the formula known for many centuries. They were well-known Pompeian wall painting and Roman art, and can be viewed in their pristine colors today. There are no shortcuts to achieving these effects, which is the sole reason why modern art became the travesty that it is today. All wars since 1900 have been totally fakes. Just listen to that statement and think about that for a minute. Remember I told you probably, and I think, I don't know if I didn't come up with this myself, but I think the only war we fought, I mean, since the American Revolution, was the War of 1812 that was fought for America. All the rest has been to destroy America. All wars since 1900 have been totally fakes. This will prove unsettling to many veterans who were crippled or killed in these fake wars. I served throughout World War II in the United States Army Air Corps, which was the first to use weapons of mass destruction on civilian populations, a fact which our opponent Saddam Hussein has strangely neglected to mention, probably because Saddam Hussein is a replacement, quote-unquote, not the opponent which we wanted at all, but a last-minute choice because no more suitable replacement was available. He has no illusions about his desirability and no doubt accepts his billing without resentment, relieved that he had made the cast after all. The first question asked of anyone in the world of the theater is, are you working? Which remains the principal goal of the profession. Everything is a charade. Ha ha, charade you are, remember? Everything is a charade which may or may not be entertaining. In fact, well, I would say, let me just interject. All the fake news is a charade. Democracy is a charade. Well, of course, that's included in everything, isn't it? But you talk about democracy or this fighting of the Orthodox Jews against the other Jews, it's a charade. It's professional wrestling. Oh, the Jews hate Donald Trump. Oh, the Jews love Donald Trump. Oh, the Jews, Donald Trump wants to make America great again. Oh, Donald Trump can't do anything. Mr. T-Rump, he just can't do anything. Some judge just pops his head out of the Ninth Circuit Court and says, no, you can't do that. These judges are more powerful than the president. Isn't that amazing? Everything is a charade which may or may not be entertaining, see? In fact, for me, the sole entertainment has been in the research. It is amazing how often the same characters have been trotted forth to go through the same cliches, the war to end war, quote unquote, and the war to save democracy. Wow. Yeah. Our beloved democracy. Yes. And the Jews will say, Mr. T-Rump, he's trying to destroy our beloved democracy. And yet Mr. T-Rump is trying to shove democracy down Iran's throat, down Iraq's throat, down Venezuela's throat, and down our throat. Ad infinitum. In fact, most of these cliches sprang from the less than agile mind of Woodrow Wilson during the First World War. However else you might choose to characterize Woodrow Wilson, you must admit he never failed to bore. But to get to the business at hand, my statement that the great wars have been exercises in sheer fakery, we might begin with a seminal event in American history, our Civil War, which ostensibly began with the firing on a federal fort in Charlestown Harbor at Fort Sumter by Southern hotheads, quote unquote. Fort Sumter had little military or strategic importance, which would make it in the seminal event of our greatest loss of life in our history. The hotheads, quote unquote, were agent provocateurs of the Scottish Rite, you know, Freemasonry, which had originated in Charlestown. The rest of the South had no knowledge of the participation in this event, which was the sole provocation of the Civil War. It worked so well that it has been used over and over again. Organizations were set up to provide the necessary umbrella for these provocations. To start, World War I, the conspirators set up three organizations, the Navy League, the Council on National Defense, and the Carnegie League, to enforce peace. Enforce peace. How do you like that? It is our first encounter with the ubiquitous term defense, quote unquote. But all three organizations were deeply committed to the steel industry through the Carnegie connection with J.P. Morgan's Rothschild banking interests. The required tax-exempt status and the absence of every man The required tax-exempt status and the absence of the very man whose name it more. Well, I don't know. I don't get that. But Carnegie, yes, I was going to just say this very thing. Rockefeller had got control of the Carnegie situation because of this reason. Listen here. This is what I was going to say, and it's here. Eustace is saying it. Carnegie had turned over his entire fortune to his foundations, virtuously announcing that he would sever all connections with their prospective operations. This handsomely suited less virtuous operators, principally John D. Rockefeller, who took over the Carnegie foundations, manipulating them as satellites of his own Rockefeller Foundation so that his name was never connected to any of their achievements. World War I, with the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, was ready to begin. As I was reading, folks, in the bloodlines of the Jewilluminati, it was talked about how the Carnegie Foundation was used by Rockefeller to do evil things, to steal and rob and all kinds of things, to influence, to buy out. Mr. Carnegie just put all of his money into the hands of the devil to use to destroy the American people. So was Mr. Carnegie a hero? for giving up all of his money. Sounds like it would be a biblical type thing, right? But you don't just give up your money blindly and let some devil steal it. You know what I mean? That was very irresponsible. And it didn't do any good, let's put it that way. Dress rehearsals had occurred in the 1890s with the Spanish-American War when the U.S. battleship Maine was blown up in Havana, and with the Boer War in South Africa, which occurred almost as an afterthought when some Boer farms in South Africa were found to be teeming with gold and diamonds. These riches were promptly acquired by the British Empire with the aid of its ubiquitous military forces, and in the process invented the concentration camp and making war on women and children, which became standard operating procedures of subsequent 20th century wars. Remember what I told you, just to testify? I told you wherever the tribe of Judah is, being German people like the Boers, England attacked those people. England attacked America, which had many German people. England attacked Germany. And England attacked the Boers and some of the Irish that were tribe of Judah. And some of the Irish were Celts. It's always stemmed from the UK, ladies and gentlemen, and the Jews in the UK. And Freemasonry has a great part to do with all of it, of course. So it continues. Mr. Mullins continues. With these impressive examples, World War I set new records in casualties and by design unseating most of the crowned heads of Europe. The British royal family survived intact, which made it the real victor in the war and chaos in which it had occurred. British intelligence, known as the British Secret Service, now roamed unchallenged across the world. They perpetrated the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, an event in which few, if any, Bolsheviks were active. In World War II, almost as an afterthought, they created their American counterpart, the Central Intelligence Agency, a group which has always been characterized by its singular lack of intelligence, as was defined by its supposed lack of knowledge of 9/11. The CIA enabled the British Secret Service to remain unseen as it worked throughout the world, as its work throughout the world was carried out by the CIA underlings. May I say that many of the CIA, if not all, are Jews. George Bush, who is a Jew, was in charge of the CIA for quite a while. I don't know exactly how many years, but he was. Well, well, well. It appears this is missing some things. Let's see what's the story here. Let me try to reopen this particular thing and see what's missing. So did somebody... there's all kinds of things missing here. I'll have to go find this thing. Let's see if this has all of the pages to it. It seems to. This one here is called The Secret of Iraq. This was the second one I was going to read to you. The Secret of Iraq by Eustace Mullins. The secret of our involvement in Iraq is no secret. This area has been known from about 500,000 BC to 5,000 BC as a Paleolithic era country. We cowered in terror before the threat of Iraq's weapons of mass delusion. a la Harry Houdini and its threat of imminent nuclear annihilation, only to find on inventing Iraq in a desperate attempt to starve off or stave off destruction that its present leader, Saddam Hussein, had been a CIA asset for the past 40 years, with his handlers numbering both Bush, Pierre et Fils, that's French, and that his nuclear capability had been destroyed years ago by Israeli assaults using American planes and bombs, etc. Did we heave a sigh of relief upon learning this news? No, we were more terrified than ever. As we entered the defining age of America, the age of terror under which we labor today. Now, Iowa farm youths are dying in unmourned pleasure vehicles manufactured by General Motors, the infamous Hummers. They are dying in Babylon, a name unfamiliar to most Americans, because Dan Rather tells us it is Baghdad, a modern version of the notorious Whore of Babylon. Has anyone in Washington ever heard of the Sumerian Empire? The Assyrian Empire? Certainly none of these 3,800, 3 and 8 is 11, overpaid, highly trained investigative reporters downing their martinis and New York strip steaks at the National Press Club ever heard of these empires. They have come and gone. Babylon dash Baghdad itself veered into oblivion in 2800 BC after some 3,000 years of prominence. Why are Americans dying in a city which had reached its peak 3,000 years ago? Answer, anyone? Anyone? It is because we are embroiled in World War III, stupid. That's the article. Don't get mad at me. A crusade from the 12th century in which Christians and Muslims rush like lemmings into mutual destruction while the instigators wait on the sidelines enjoying the gladiators in our modern Colosseum, the television set. Two names are never mentioned in contemporary accounts of this imbroglio: Woodrow Wilson and Ronald Reagan. Yet they account for the entire story. You can throw in the ubiquitous FDR and Wilson's mentor, Colonel House, Mandel House, and you have it all. Why was Ronald Reagan accorded a Pharaoh's funeral when he passed away recently? He was honored as the maestro of World War III, which he arranged during his presidency. Reagan is revered for his monumental feat in the ending of the communist threat, quote-unquote, which he did by a simple act. He cut off the flow of cash from the taxpayers of the United States, an unending stream which had been launched by Woodrow Wilson in 1917, and which ended in 1989, aided by Senator Joe McCarthy's astounding discovery that the world headquarters of communism was not Moscow, as we have been taught since childhood, but in Washington, D.C., the headquarters of our fake money and Federal Reserve System. When Joe began to rattle the branches, the money tree stopped its manna, and the dreaded Soviet Empire, unable to survive for a single day on its own, quickly joined the Sumerians and Assyrians on the dust heap of history. Remember that Ronald Reagan was called Red Ronnie. And what, I don't know if Eustace is going to say this here, but I've sort of said this before to you, that they wanted to end the Cold War and the idea of communism because you could link it to the Jews too easily. That's why they like it, democracy and socialism. It's just a code word for communism. And they wanted to bring in this war on terror, one who couldn't, where you can't identify who the terrorists are. They're faceless men. They're, you don't know. It could be you. It could be anybody. But it's anybody but the Jew. I can promise you that. Sure it is. The terrorists have always been the Jews, folks. The terrorists have always been the Jews. And even the British, and I'm sure, you know, they were dressing up as like Hezbollah or whatever it was during the Iraq war, and they were committing terrorist acts. And even after the war, they've been doing this for a long time. See, one beautiful thing for these people is that anybody can put on one of these Middle Eastern garb and hide behind it. And of course, the media can just say, well, we don't know who these terrorists are. Or, you know, they can just name a terrorist, name somebody that's not even a terrorist at all, and everybody will believe it. So Reagan ended the Cold War, and it seemed like a champion thing. But he brought in the next phase, which was the war on terror, the faceless, unknown enemy. All right, let's continue with the article, the booklet. This should be enough of a history lesson for one session, but I will go a bit further. How did Hollywood, the Hollywood sycophant, Ronald Reagan, arrange World War III? He was an actor, all of whose scripts were carefully written for him, and so was this one. When he was elected president in 1980, a day of despair for the doomsayers, the same ones who greeted Bush's re-election at the end of this world, which they would celebrate by moving to Canada or Australia, Reagan made his triumphant entry into Washington, accompanied by carefully selected trained, quote-unquote, advisors, who had been recruited from the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. Its full name is the Hoover Institution of War, Revolution, and Peace. That's nice. Very Orwellian. The Hoover Institution of War, Revolution, and Peace. Why, it's an institution for war and peace and revolution to bring peace. Sure. It continues, or he continues. I am the only historian who has ever accounted for its miraculous growth as the think tank for all think tanks. After World War I, the Rothschilds realized that someone might actually find out how World War I made its unexplained appearance on the world's scene. These clever bankers hired 400 recently discharged U.S. Army officers to travel to Europe, carefully gathering up all documents which might reveal their complicity in the war. Let me just stop right there. Now tell me, this isn't amazing. Did you hear my rabbit hole radio show from yesterday? Edgar J. Hoover sent a group of American people over there to cover up everything about Disney in Spain, where he was, of course, born. This is exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. Think about it again. I'm going to read this little part again. These clever bankers hired 400 recently discharged U.S. Army officers to travel to Europe, carefully gathering up all documents which might reveal their complicity in the war. These papers are stored at Stanford University. The name of the think tank had no connection with J. Edgar Hoover. Here he is again. It's him. Wow. But with the sainted former president, who was revered in Russia as the savior of communism, with Russian relief in 1921, and again, the name of the think tank had no... Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm sorry. I was switching the page and it got a little... Oh boy, I have to see a Negress. But with the sainted former president, who was revered in Russia as the savior of communism, with Russian relief in 1921, and again in subsequent relief efforts, because of the revealing connection, a quickly manufactured story which became gospel claimed that he was fanatical anti-communist, which the gullible believe today. Here's the Negress we have to take a look at now. Who is the President Bush's closest advisor? Condoleezza Rice. His newly named Secretary of State. This is the same Rice who was provost of Stanford University. Once again appearing in Washington is Robert McFarland, who was Reagan's national security advisor. It's the same cast, folks, replaying the life and loves of Andy Hardy. The farm boys know nothing of this. They never will know it. But they have their moment of glory when CBS fake news, when you see BS, you see BS. That was one of my little coinings. Who knows if I'm the first one to think of it, though. When CBS News honors them for 3 seconds each evening as our fallen heroes, the Hoover Institution quickly gained fame as the final resting place of our greatest Trotskyite communist under the aegis of Sidney Hook and his partner Seymour, heroes of the Trotskyite memory squad. They snickered for years at the manufactured reputation of the Hoover Institution as the headquarters of anti-communism, where only real communists were welcomed. I was never in its walls. Also revered as FDR for his protege, Alger, whom he called son. Alger Hiss was one of FDR's personal assistants. The others were Lachlan Curry and Harry Dexter White. All three were named before congressional hearings and known as KGB agents for Stalin. So remember those names, Lachlan Curry and Harry Dexter White. All of these were named before congressional hearings known as the KGB agents for Stalin. Alger Hiss has now come into his full glory as the founder of the United Nations. So we operate under his aegis. I want to look up the word aegis. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. AEGIS. I'm sure some of you know what it means. Maybe it's an aura. Who knows? I don't know. Oh, aegis. And that's how you say it, aegis. The protection, backing, or support of a particular person or organization. Negotiations were conducted under the aegis of the UN, under the backing, protection. Okay, we learned something there. All right, back to the article. Let me pop this back up. Okay, forgotten is our outdated Federal Reserve Constitution with its medieval tokens of account. In our future, money will be food stamps and coupons. None will be fed who does not bear the mark of the beast. But tell us, Eustace, how do we get out of Iraq? Where is the exit door? I'm sorry, folks, there isn't one, says Eustace. We got out of Vietnam by the skin of our teeth in waiting helicopters. Helicopter engines don't work in the sand. We have not yet found Ali Baba's cave in Iraq. The jewels vanished 2,000 years ago. Moving from fantasy to reality, we come back to the real world where a fanatical band of conspirators known in Washington as the Chicken Hawks, younger men without military risks who did not hesitate to order American youths to the Middle East to bring the dream of world conquest to fruition. All of them are well known in political circles, where they are known as chevaliers sans reproche, quote unquote, because no one dares to criticize them. They're people that are beyond reproach. The names Faith, Libby, Billy Crystal of Hollywood, or Billy Crystal, son of Irving, one of New York's most venerable socialists, and Richard Pearl, renowned in Washington for his sobriquet, the Prince of Darkness, quote-unquote, proceed on their own chosen path, willing to risk all for Israel and dedicating to risking all America for Israel. They might be at greater risk than they know, as the Nuremberg trials tried, convicted, and executed German leaders for planning and waging aggressive war, quote-unquote, after World War II. What follows World War III? And why is Bush's cabinet hastily resigning? Not only did the conspirators attack the very foundation of the civilization at the juncture of the Tigris and Euphrates, then disguised their conspiracy by saying that it was a quest for oil. No oil has been forthcoming. But let me just stop that for a moment. So Bush was telling us it was a quest for oil in Iraq. Now let's think about something. America has the most oil in the whole world. Why would we need Iraq's oil other than to just control more oil? Who would want to do something like that but a Jew? Why can't Iraq have its own oil and take care of its own country with its own oil? What's wrong with that? Well, the Jew says that competition is a sin. But as I've told you, if you stifle all competition, then there's nothing, there's no point of even trying to do anything at all. Competition is a healthy thing. And it's good for countries to compete. It's good for men and women to compete. It's good. I don't mean against each other, but I mean, you know, against each other in their own, you know, way. I don't mean men against women. I mean men against men, women against women, competing. Competition today is egalitarianism in several ways. We can't have anybody getting a trophy and showing that they can outrun somebody else because they wouldn't be equal. So all people get a trophy. So this was all about oil, according to Bush. I remember that too. And of course, we never did get any oil, but we don't really need any oil. Historians will record that the Sixth Zionist World Congress at Basel in 1896, an impassioned speaker painted a glowing picture of three world wars, and after the kind, the delivery of the world into their hands. We are now in the Third World War. I agree 100%. Will humanity take the hint and move for its own survival? Or is this a trivial question? The end. Unbelievable. You know, when I look at that, I realize that Eustace was telling you that that was the beginning of World War III. And World War III, defined by them, was to create a social cataclysm between Muslims and Christians. Can you now see World War III is not the same kind of war as World War I and World War II? Oh, it might have some bombs and some terrorism. But this is a different kind of war. This is war in the streets. War in your own home. And our patience, we are a patient people. And they keep doing things, but the war just does not begin. It's not carrying out like they want. There's not enough blood being spilt for these Jews. These Jews want to see blood spilled. And they're doing everything they can to start a war in one way or another. If we don't go after Russia, then at least we got to go after Iran. And if we don't go after Iran, we at least got to go after North Korea. We got to spill some blood. We can't let one decade go by without spilling tons and tons of blood, say the Jews. And they've been spilling blood. You know, when I was thinking about the world as a young man, I thought, geez, it would have been nice to live in the 50s, but there was Korea there. Oh, well, it was nice. Might have been nice to live in the 60s or 70s, but, oh, no, you've gotten trapped into Vietnam and other wars, right? I mean, you know, no matter where you look, these Jews have started wars to make sure that blood is spilled and spilled and spilled and spilled. When Clinton was in, they made sure they went over Serbia and spilled a lot of blood. And they're allowing the white people to die in South Africa. Lots of blood being spilt there, and they don't report about it. Please pray for those people. I've been praying for them, and I ask you to pray for them as well. May the Father deliver them. What a shame. Like I said about that whole situation is, those people could feed a continent. Any nation that had any brains at all would love to have those people as part of their nation. And they would invest in people like that, give them farms and give them equipment and give them seeds and turn them loose upon the land. But see, they don't want that kind of success in our countries. That's why that's not happening. And they're also Boers. They're German white people. They need to die, according to the Jews and the English Jews and Freemasons. See, the reason why good things aren't happening in our nations, folks, is because they don't want them to happen. It's just that simple. They don't want to stop these people coming over the border and killing us and stabbing us and all the things that they're doing. They don't want to stop that at all. They want to kill us. You just think about it for a while, how nonsensical it is. Say if I was from Venezuela and I was one of these people that wanted to come to America. Well, the first thing I'd want to do is get up here and make sure that America became just like Venezuela so I could suffer just like it is there. No, that's not the common sense. That's not common sense thinking. If I was trying to escape a hellhole to go to the promised land, so to speak, I wouldn't want to turn the promised land into a hellhole like I came from, because now where would I escape to next? You see, this is orchestrated, and people will do anything for money. They really will. That's why people like Soros can count on this. You know, I saw an article, too, about if they try to impeach Trump, the bikers are going to go into Washington, D.C. Now, this shows you the mentality of the bikers. They can't see that these people are, that this Mr. T-Rump is not trying to make America great again. They can't. They actually believe that he's what he said he was. I mean, the image, when I talk about media driven, the image of this man is, or any of these people, is media driven. The Jews pretend they hate this Mr. T-Rump, and he licks all of their boots, and secretly behind the scenes, they love him. They want to name a place after him in the Golan Heights. They love Mr. T-Rump. They love the red-haired boy or the orange-haired man. See, people that are redheaded, they're really orange-headed. But I'm not saying anything, you know, about, you know, if you have red hair, that doesn't mean you're evil or anything like that. But they have this obsession with the red-haired boy, the orange-haired boy. You know, Archie? No, not Bunker. Archie and Veronica and the cartoon. Archie's red-headed boy, too. And if you keep looking and looking, you'll see that these Jews are obsessed with these redheaded children. As I've spoken of recently. I suppose while we have some time left, we could look at even another. My goodness, this one's hardly readable. We could look at another Eustace Mullen track. I can't believe that some of the pages of that are missing. All right, here's another one by Eustace, and let's see if we can get through it. This is called The Scandal Unveiled by Eustace Mullins. The Wall Street Journal has led the exposé of the current financial scandals which have supposedly rocked Wall Street. They have given us endless details about Dennis Levine and Ivan Boesky. They have even been forced to mention the name of Drexel Burnham Lambert, investment bankers extraordinary. What they have not done is to tell the American people just what is going on. Who is doing what to whom? You will read here for the first time the names of the major players, names which the Wall Street Journal dares not mention. The first name is Rothschild. Not once has the Wall Street Journal, during its current expose, quote-unquote, dared to mention the vital information that Drexel Burnham Lambert, pronounced Lambeer, is the New York branch of Bank Bruxelles Lambert of Brussels, Belgium, or that the enormously wealthy Baron Lambert is regularly listed as an attendee at the Bilderberg meetings. Could that be where Paul has been lately? The Wall Street Journal would have you believe that a greedy young stockbroker, Dennis Levine, a minor figure at Drexel Burnham Lambert, cut himself in on some upcoming deals at his firm and stashed $12 million in an offshore bank, that he was contacted by one Ivan Boesky, an arbitrator, quote-unquote, read Rag and Bone Men, quote-unquote, see The World Order by Eustace Mullins for further information, who offered Levine a contract whereby Boesky would pay Levine 5% of profits which Boesky made from stock trades involving inside information provided him by Levine. Said contract, of course, was illegal. Not only that, but it was a breach of ethics, quote-unquote. Well, Jews don't worry about breaches of ethics. Only top officials of these firms being allowed to profit from such information. It was not for the clerks. Let me tell you what was really going on. While Boesky and Levine were engaged in their penny ante operations, a gigantic financial plot, one might as well say swindle, was being conducted to gain control of the major corporations for alien interests. To plot, quite simply, was to buy, quote, unquote, out or leverage these corporations by a consortium of international financiers who had unlimited capital at their command. Can you think of anybody that might have unlimited capital at their command? I can't. The beauty of the plan was that, despite their unlimited capital, the conspirators would not put up any capital. Instead, they would create a new type of financial instrument called a junk bond, quote-unquote, to pay for their seizure of these American corporations. The financial writers of the U.S. routinely refer to Drexel Burnham Lambert as the creators of the junk bond, quote-unquote. This is nonsense. The plan originated in Brussels, Belgium, at the offices of Banks Bruxelles Lambert. It is no accident that Brussels is the headquarters of NATO, which actually rules Europe in the name of the world order, the Jew world order, or that the head of NATO is Lord Carrington. Ladies and gentlemen, the head of NATO is Lord Carrington? A Rothschild relative? and partner of, I didn't plan this, and partner of Henry Kissinger in the notorious international operation known as Kiss Ass, quote unquote. An irrelevant Wall Street title for the firm of Kissinger Associates. Oh, that Kiss Ass. That's for, I get it, for Kissinger. Associates, wheelers and dealers for the Jew World Order. Nor is it an accident that in the current White House crisis, may I mention this, that as I'm reading the bloodlines of the Illuminati, both the name Carrington and Hitchcock seem to come up quite a bit. And you see here that Lord Carrington is a Rothschild relative. Now, I'm not making any accusations. I'm making observations. This was just dealt out to me. But it also links up with the bloodlines of the Illuminati, the Jew-Illuminati. Did I just coin another new term in this show? I doubt it. Anyway, so he goes on, nor is it an accident that in the current White House crisis, Reagan stands convicted of the eyes of the world as an international conspirator caught with his hands in the till with his Israeli co-conspirators who had to be hastily summoned to take over, quote-unquote, the situation. None other than Lieutenant General Brent Snowcroft, a partner in Kissinger Associates, Snowcroft is also a trustee of the RAND Corporation, Georgetown Center for Strategic and International Studies, Council on Foreign Relations, and the U.S. Air Force University. Lord Carrington has very close ties with the British royal family and is a director of continued on page Rio Tinto, one of the three firms of which Rothschild Fortune is based. The Rothschild Fortune is based. Brussels is also the location of the World Computer Center set up by the bank Rothschild to maintain computer records on every inhabitant of the world, who will thus be ruled from world headquarters, quote unquote. To understand this power, we must go back 200 years in history. While the American colonists were fighting to win their independence, the British crown cast about for some top combat troops who could put down the rebels, quote-unquote. The king was offered some seasoned troops, Hessians by a minor German potentate, the Elector of Hesse. When the Elector received payment for his mercenaries, he entrusted the proceeds to a financial advisor, one Mayor Amschel Bauer of Frankfurt, Germany, later known as Rothschild. You know, it's funny, as I was going through Jewish actors, and they didn't say he was Jewish, but you remember Rutger Hauer, H-A-U-E-R? Well, Amschel Bauer is Rothschild. They changed their name. It's kind of like the name Bayer is the same thing in a way. Very interesting. So I'm going to read this part again. When the Elector received payment for his mercenaries, he entrusted the proceeds to a financial advisor, one Mayor Amschel Bauer of Frankfurt, Germany, later known as Rothschild. Rothschild invested the funds very profitably. The Elector suddenly died. Oh, that's just hard to believe. And a new dynasty was born. With their newfound wealth, the Rothschilds developed a new technique, not merely for controlling one nation, but for controlling all nations simultaneously. The technique was simple. They would create a bogeyman, an evil militarist, intent on conquering the entire world. Can you say Hitler? The altruistic Rothschilds would finance allies, quote-unquote, to oppose and crush the evil fanatic. The first monster created by the new dynasty of international financiers was Napoleon. He was allowed to march across Europe, winning victory after victory against straw man opponents. The fight game has been manipulated by the Jacobs family in the U.S. for decades using the same technique. When the dictator, quote-unquote, had been built up to world-class status, can you say Saddam Hussein? A phalanx of nations was financed and armed by the Rothschilds to rise up against him. Napoleon, who had been led to believe that he had no serious opposition, was stunned to find at Waterloo that he had been betrayed by his own generals. In 1914, the Kaiser was the monster before whom civilization quailed. Again, benefactors were found to oppose him, and the Morgans and Kuhn and Loeb Company, acting as lieutenants for the Rothschilds, armed the Allies, quote-unquote, the Allies. You see, what I like about that is when you see the word allies, it says all lies. A-L-L-I-E-S. And Israel, this fake Israel, this imitation Israel over there, these Jews, imitation men, they're not real men. They say that Israel is America's greatest ally. And it's a lie. So, acting as lieutenants for the Rothschilds, armed the Allies, quote-unquote, against the German militarists who tossed babies on their bayonets. In 1939, another monster, Adolf Hitler, financed by the Bank of England, again menaced civilization. Once again, the only victor was the Rothschild family. The Rothschild technique was a simple one. After setting up a central bank, the Rothschilds controlled a nation by controlling the issuance of money and credit. Then they embarked on a ruinous program of armaments financed by progressively higher and higher taxation, which reduced the citizens to the status of serfs. The munitions program, of course, was absolutely necessary because there would always be a Rothschild-created monster on the horizon. After defeating Napoleon, the Rothschilds brought the victorious Allies together at the Rothschild headquarters, Vienna, for the Congress of Vienna in 1515. I always thought it was 1815. Oh, maybe this was a previous one. What has this to do with our current scandal? Be patient. The mastermind of the present Drexel Burnham Lambert operation is a former partner of Bank Rothschild, Sir James Goldsmith. Boy. He is married to his third wife, the daughter of the Marquis of Londonderry, Viscount Castlereagh. At the Congress of Vienna in 1815, the negotiations were dominated by her ancestor, Viscount Castlereagh, the famed foreign minister of England. Castlereagh apparently did not understand at the time that his negotiations were designed to create a new ruler in Europe, the Rothschild family. Castlereagh was minister plenipotentiary of the victors at Waterloo, the British crown. With him was his half-brother and heir, Lord Charles Stuart, British ambassador to Vienna. At the Treaty of Paris, Stuart is usually a Jew name, by the way. At the Treaty of Paris, or Paris, Castlereagh achieved his principal objective in France to solidify the control of the Bourbons. Sir James Goldsmith, Sir James, not only is he a filthy, dirty Jew, but he's a Freemason. Sir James Goldsmith's second wife had been Laura Boulay de la Melth, niece of the Comte de Paris, present head of the Bourbon family and pretender of the throne of France. Viscount Castlereagh owed his own spectacular rise to the fact that he was the godson of his uncle, Lord Camden, Charles Pratt, Lord, who served as Attorney General of England and President of the Privy Council. Lord Camden frequently lent money to the Prime Minister, William Pitt, and became the power behind the Pitt Ministry. The Pratt family has also been prominent behind the scenes in the United States. Pratt was John D. Rockefeller's partner in Standard Oil and gave his New York mansion as the present headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations. His descendant, George Pratt Schultz, a Jewish name, of course, is now Secretary of State. Oh, you said, no, that's German. Well, you remember the Peanuts? That Schultz is a Jew. And I believe this one is, too. And so was the one on Hogan's Hero. Schultz was a Jew, believe it or not, John Banner. He was. In 1822, Viscount Castlereagh realized how he had handed Europe over to the Rothschilds as a result of his actions at the Congress of Vienna. He became extremely depressed, realizing it was too late to rectify his acts. He had an audience with George IV, saying to him, "Sire, it is necessary to say goodbye to Europe." He then went to his home and committed suicide, cutting his carotid artery with a small penknife. There has been considerable speculation about the sudden depression and suicide, notably in The Strange Death of Castlereagh by Montgomery Hyde, a well-known British historian. Hyde suggests he may have been depressed by a false accusation of an act of homosexuality, or that he may have been given a drug which produced extreme depression. That would be pharmakia, ladies and gentlemen, sorcery, to cast a spell upon someone. Because Castlereagh delivered Europe into the hands of the Rothschilds through his diplomacy, Henry Kissinger openly modeled his own diplomatic career after Castlereagh, accepting, of course, the suicide. He reveals this resolve in his book, A World Restored, quote-unquote, Grusset and Dunlap, 1964, which he dedicated to McGeorge Bundy of the Ford Foundation. That's one of the top families, ladies and gentlemen. McGeorge Bundy. The Bundy name. Remember the Bundy Ranch? The PSYOP that went on recently? Bundy is one of the 13 families of the Jewilluminati. And McGeorge Bundy is one of the big players. So Mr. Kissinger dedicated it to McGeorge Bundy of the Ford Foundation. Kissinger's goal, which he followed as Secretary of State, was to perpetuate the Rothschild world hegemony enthroned at the Congress of Vienna, which had been described by von Gentz, Secretary to Prince von Metternich, as follows. The real purpose of the Congress was to divide among the conquerors the spoils taken from the vanquished. From the Congress of Vienna came the phrases Austrian school of politics, quote-unquote, and the Austrian school of economics, quote-unquote, presently epitomized by Milton Friedman, another Jew, in which Rothschild financial schemes are used to carry out Rothschild political goals. Sir James Goldsmith's grandfather was financier advisor to Bismarck during the rise of the German Empire. Goldsmith first married Isabel Patino, heiress to the tin fortune of the Patino family, which had also been backed by the Rothschilds. Isabel Patino died mysteriously. He just got all of her wealth. My goodness. How can that happen? These Jews just marry people and, you know, just all of a sudden they die. Goldsmith then married the niece of the Bourbon heir, and third, the descendant of Viscount Castlereagh. Goldsmith is now bidding for Channel 5, the French TV station. He owns L'Express, the biggest news weekly in France, Lire, a major book periodical, and La Cité de France, the largest French book publisher. He also owns a weekly newspaper in Belgium. The Wall Street Journal reported that Goldsmith made 93 million, 9 times 3 is 27, 2 and 7 is 9, the devil, 93 million profit in a recent 600 million takeover attempt at Goodyear. It doesn't stop with these Jews, I'm telling you. The Wall Street Journal noted that Goldsmith was a major partner of Boesky and his operations, having invested $3 million of Drexel Burnham Lambert funds into the Boesky deal. Boesky's other major partners were Milton and Joseph Dresner, $10 million, Marty Peretz, publisher of the fanatically pro-Israeli publication The New Republic, $1 million, and Louis Lehrman, famed conservative backer of Ronald Reagan, the Lehrman Institute, and the Heritage Foundation, $1 million. Boesky was characterized in the Washington Post of November 21st, 1986, as follows. Boesky is known for his passion of the State of Israel, for the State of Israel and Jewish causes. He was appointed to the notorious Holocaust Commission by President Reagan, for whom he had been active as a fundraiser. These connections stood him in good stead with Sorkin of the Securities Exchange Commission, announced a supposedly heavy punitive assessment against Boesky, an unprecedented $100 million, of which $50 million was a fine and $50 million for restitution to investors. This seemed a drastic penalty, but the Wall Street Journal promptly pointed out that $25 million of this fine will be allowed as a tax deduction for Boesky. how quaint. The SEC also outraged Wall Street investors by allowing Boesky to unload $440 million worth of stocks before announcing their punitive action against him. These stocks, principally holdings of Time, CSX, and Goodyear, which Boesky had been buying for future takeover action, immediately dropped 15% in value. Let me just stop one second. 440 million, 44, the devil's number again. It's just another number that the devil loves. Remember this from B.F. Jackson. So this meant that Boesky picked up around $70 million in profits by unloading them, while other Wall Street investors lost heavily. Merrill Lynch alone lost $40 million because of Boesky's stock dumping. At the same time, Morgan Stanley's real estate division is selling Boesky's several Beverly Hills hotel. Boesky married the daughter of Ben Silberstein. folks, you just can't make these things up. Who owned this hotel for $140 million, of which Boesky will receive half, or $70 million. The SEC also is continuing allowing Boesky to trade stocks until April 1988, which caused further anger among investors who have been damaged by his manipulations. Boesky was also rumored to have videotapes of some of his associates while discussing these manipulations, but later stories said he has only made audio tapes of their dealings with him. A source commented to the Wall Street Journal November 21st, 1986, first he sold his friends to the government, then he sold his stocks to his friends. Sounds like a true Jew to me. The American public is not likely to be informed of Boesky's profits. Large though they may seem, are minuscule compared to the profits made in these takeovers by the major players. Sir James Goldsmith and his partners, the Rothschilds, our investigative reporters, quote-unquote, are not allowed to go beyond the straw men, nor have they ever heard of the Congress of Vienna, where these formulae were developed. The American people are misled into concerns about tax reform while their manipulators prepare the sheep for the shearing, business as usual. Well, there you have it, folks. I mean, these Jews, there's just no end to what they want to do and how they destroy people. And the takeover of the American corporations, you can see now, you have a glimpse into how it's done. I also mentioned that, of course, by having the central bank, they just print up whatever amount of money that it is for the paper or the news station or whatever it is that they want to take control of, and they just go buy it. I mean, money's no object. And if you have a $20 million business and somebody says, well, I'll give you $50 million, you know, that would be hard to turn down, wouldn't it? So basically, they stole the business for absolutely nothing. And then they probably killed the man who they bought it off or did something to him to get the money back later. It's a very dirty world, full of very filthy Jews and traitors and liars, practicing liars. You'd be surprised who's a practicing liar. I'm surprised myself. But not totally, just whatever. No, not all things are what they seem to be. Please, I implore you to keep your mind, keep your heart, keep your focus, keep your love for the Father. Do not be involved in institutions and following men. I keep on saying this. This is so important because you're setting yourself up. I've noticed of recent that CI is something that's being promoted much more than the Father is. For some reason, this CI needs to be promoted to jail people. This CI needs to be promoted, but the Father is hardly even mentioned by the CI promoters. This is why I want nothing to do with CI. CI is not important. It's not more important than the Father. It's not even in the Father's league. I think if you think about it and remember, you'll see that these people are promoting CI. I don't promote CI, I promote the Father. I don't want you to follow CI. I don't want you to follow men. I want you to follow the Father. I want you to be grounded in Him, on the rock, standing on the rock firmly. Because if you focus on any other thing but the Father, you're on quicksand. It's something that I'm getting educated more than I realize as I think on things. I think like, wow, how come I didn't really notice that? I guess I noticed it, but I didn't really focus on it. It's always this talk about in CI we do this, in CI we do that. CI is this great thing, and CI, what about the Father? You think the Father's going to be interested in the glory of CI, or is he interested in you glorifying him? I think you know the answer. I see that I do not want anything to do with CI. How's that for a statement? I see, but I don't want anything to do with CI at all. So those of you out there that are in CI that listen to me, I'm not against you as people or anything like that. I just don't want to be involved in that particular thing. I don't like what I see. I don't like what I've seen in the past. And I would like the sheep to follow the Father, not an institution. I would like the sheep to follow the Father, not a man. For their own safety. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.